Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, before we get into the podcast here, just to let you know, we are back in Cork's Opera House on August the 22nd to open the Cork Podcast Festival.
Which is an absolute honour, and myself and James are thrilled to be a part of such a great night, particularly when you have so many fantastic podcasts coming from Cork on the night and the week as well.
Yeah, no, listen, it's great to be part of the podcast scene. And we have a great guest on the night too, a friend of ours, Brezzy, a mental health advocate who's got a great story. Among other things, he's played Munster or rugby with Leinster, and he had a panic attack live on TV, and he does his own show now around his own journey. So it's going to be powerful.
Yeah, he's just going to talk about his story growing up and when it all started for him in relation to his mental health, and how he came through it and what he does today around it. No, he does a lot of work within schools today and helps children to be able to cope much, much better with their own mental health, and he creates programs and stuff like that, and he does a lot of funding. So it should be a fantastic night.
Yeah, we'll have a bit of entertainment, a bit of music and a bit of a crack as well. So hope to see you there August the 22nd. Tickets available at ticketmaster.ie or Cork Opera House box office. Thank you and enjoy the podcast. Hello everybody and welcome back to the Two and Harry's podcast. I'm your host James and I'm joined as always by my good friend Timmy Long.
Hi everyone.
And our guest today is Limerick professional boxer Graham McCormack. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
It's great to have you here. It's roasting, isn't it?
Thanks for having me on, and it is roasting, yeah. It's very, very warm. Losing a few pounds sitting down here, which is great.
I know,
yeah. Bonus.
What weight do you fight at?
I fight at middleweight.
How many kilos is that?
72.5.
So what do you walk around at when you're not in camp?
I'm terrible, man. I'll be honest, I walk around about 85, 86 kilos on that camp. I get so heavy out of fights. People are like, oh, why don't you keep it down? I'm like, because I can't fucking keep it down. Like, I don't even have to eat food, man. If I just look at a burger, like, I'm 2 kilos heavier, man. I'm
when you're getting your mid-30s, that's the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah, man, I'm telling you. It's a lot harder now than what it was a couple of years ago. But look, it's... In a way, I kind of enjoy the struggle of getting the kilos down. People are like, oh, you can make it a lot easier for yourself. But I have to train that bit harder, you know what I mean? And it just keeps me in the gym. I have to train 2 or 3 times a day. I enjoy it, man, you know what I mean? I enjoy the bit of struggle of getting the weight down. So, like, I think if I walked around at the weight, I wouldn't enjoy the camps as much as I enjoy them, you know what I mean?
Sides to a fight.
Yeah.
One side is getting into the ring and fighting your opponent.
Yeah.
But the other side is making weight and training for it. Like, that's a battle in itself.
Yeah,
and it's the longer battle. You're not here for whatever, 5 or 8, 10, 12 rounds.
Yeah.
Like, it's the 12, 13 weeks beforehand.
The camps, man. It's the camps. And that's what people don't realise as well, as like that. Everyone says, oh, he took some big shots in the fight. Not about the big shots you take two sparring sessions every week for 10 weeks straight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's where the hard work is done. Like, 3 times in the gym a day. You know what I mean? Like, then you're sparring on a Monday, sparring on a Friday. That's where the hard, where the damage is done. Like,
you know, the sparrings, then, would you be fighting fellas that are heavier than you? Or... What way does it work? Do you bring fellas in a bigger than you?
It depends kind of on the fight, you know what I mean? Like, if you're fighting, like, say, like a domestic fight or a good opponent, like, you get someone similar to the opponent you're fighting, you know what I mean? So, like, if you're fighting a southpaw, you'll get a southpaw. If you're fighting an aggressive fighter, you'll get an aggressive fighter to spar. But, like, it's hard to get a sparring partner all the time. So sometimes you'll just spar whoever you can get to spar, you know what I mean? Because it's hard sometimes to get sparring partners. But, like, we're lucky in Limerick, you know, I'll give all the boys a shout at the Limerick Boxers. Like, we all work together and we all spar with each other. So, like, we don't have to travel anywhere to go in there. We've Paddy Donovan, we've Edward Donovan, Lee Reeves, Jamie Morrissey, you know, we've Jason Harty, we've everyone down it's great, like, because we have so much sparring partners down there, you know.
There's a great history of boxing coming out of Limerick, isn't there?
Yeah.
Some big names come out of there. Like.
Yeah, Andy Lee, man, you know what I mean?
World champion.
Yeah, unbelievable, you know what I mean? So, like, Limerick, and Limerick, it seems now again Limerick is buzzing with boxing again, which we've kind of missed it. We missed it for a few years, you know what I mean? So now there's so many of us now, it's buzzing down there, you know what I mean? So we don't have to travel too far for the spars, which is great, like.
Yeah, it's great in Cork as well, because obviously we Spike, and Spike's out to fight, and all his defeats are by world champions.
Yeah.
Mangia,
Lara,
Billy Joe, Eubank,
yeah,
Lara. Big fights he's had. Yeah. I know we've Tommy Hyde up and coming.
Yeah, Tommy's so great, and I like Tommy fighting Saturday night. I like Tommy Hyde, and he's, you know, like I just said, he's the kind of kid you want to see do well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause he's a real humble kid. He's good head and his shoulders. Cork is like Limerick, man. It's another great city with just a few pros on and know as well. You have that guy Freddie Roach is training him. Callum Walsh, see him.
Yeah,
he's a brilliant boxer. Like, he just won a WBC international title over there in America, like Freddie Roach training him. So Cork is passionate out some serious boxers as well, like. Yeah. So it's great to see for Munster, man, realistically, like, all the good boxers.
But we're a great little island for boxing, aren't
we?
For the population.
Violent, aggressive island.
we're good people to back up our own as well.
Yeah.
The whole country gets behind Katie Taylor. Mm. She's going, and anytime we've somebody fighting internationally, the whole country is behind him.
Yeah.
Everybody's behind him. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great to see as well, like, you, Katie Taylor, Conor McGregor, you know, it's unbelievable. You know what I mean? We support our own, and that's what you want to see, man. You know what I mean? We are a small island, but we're a good island, and we do get behind our own. You know what I mean?
But you're in recovery, like ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So before, like, take us right back. Where you're from? What was it like growing up for you?
I'm from Limerick, the island field. I moved around a lot when I was young. Then I stayed at my nana's in Plaster. I'm from definitely a rougher area in Limerick. Moved away out of it, as I was ordering. Not a usual story, man. Started drinking and drugging young. I was lucky enough as a teenager, I got into boxing. Started boxing as about 14, 15. So my addiction didn't completely take over my life until I got a bit older.
Were you in school?
No, I left school. Dropped out of school first year. I went back through my LCA and then I just completely left it then, you know what I mean? I just never
for me. The outreach or anything like
that? I went into the outreach, man, and then I went to the outreach in town, in Limerick town. I ended up getting thrown out of that. And I went to one out of the country, which was great. But the principal then died, and he was real good to all of us out there. So when he died, we all kind of just left it, you know what I mean? And so I suppose boxing kept me kind of on a straight and narrow as a younger teenager. Turned 18 then, man, and I had a bit of a claim, and money came in. I suppose I always had the addict tendencies, man, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The drinking and the drugging as a young fella. But with the boxing, I kind of saved a couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
Soon as I got the money in my hand, man, boxing got the backbone. I started drinking and drugging again. And I always hung around with a bad crowd, you know what I mean? I always, like, I come from a good family, like, but I always found the bad road, no matter where I went. You could have left me in the middle of a field and I would have found the bad road out of there, you know what I mean? So
where you're from, there's a lot of drinking and drugging in the area, isn't it?
Yeah, where I'm from, like, anywhere you go to Limerick, man, nowadays, like, especially when I was growing up, that's where it was, man. That's just Limerick, you know what I mean? It's drugs and alcohol from a young age, man, you know, and it's worse now than it ever was.
Yeah,
it's worse now than it ever was, and that's the truth. It's worse now than it ever was. But
how has things changed in Limerick in terms of the drug scene?
I think it's gotten a lot worse. It's gotten a lot more aggressive in the drug scene in Limerick now. Like,
do you think that's because of the crack cocaine?
Definitely a big part of it. Yeah, it's definitely a big part of it.
It's the same in Cork and Dublin.
Yeah, it's definitely a big part of it, but it's also, like, I think it's more nobody bats an eyelid anymore. When young fellas are drinking or vaping, wanting on the road, it's like, whatever. Like, whereas, like, back when I was 12, 13, it's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't go drinking, your father kill you, or your mother kill you. Whereas now it's like, no one cares. No one cares. You know what I mean? I see the kids now, like, and it's just not as, you know, there's not that much fear in it anymore.
It's
more accepted for younger people to do it nowadays than it was back
sad,
when it's very sad. Very sad, man. You know what I mean? It's very sad. And I think the world is a scary place now, man. You know what I mean? And it's getting a lot worse. So, like, For my kids, our kids, younger kids know, I think it's going to be a lot harder than what it was for me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The social media and, like, none of that was wrong when I was younger. Thank God.
I know.
Thank God. That was me when I was younger, man.
When you come into recovery, then you can move on with your life.
Yeah.
But as young fellas and girls that are caught up in it now, when they get older, it could be very damaging stuff or humiliating stuff that could recirculate when they're in their 30s.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this social media, it's so hard. I'm glad it wasn't wrong when I was a kid, like, because obviously, like, the drinking and the drugging, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing.
You don't know who's taking
a video
of you.
You don't know nothing.
What you're doing, especially if you're out of your head. And there's times there, I go off and walk up the next morning and I wouldn't even know where I am.
Ah.
And you wouldn't even know what you would have been doing the night before. So imagine then
someone video on it
coming out on social media within it and whatever it may be, and like that can be very traumatic for a person, particularly a young person who's not able to understand it or process it.
Well, they're definitely able to understand it at that age, man. I wouldn't have been able to. Yeah, you know what I mean? No way, like, you know, would I have been able to understand at that age. But like, as when I was younger, like, if that was going on when I was younger, like, I would have, don't know what I've ever started boxing, because that stuff would have took over my life, and the social media and thinking I was trying to live the life that you see on social media. Do you know what I mean? That I see these kids. I have older kids from my next relationship, and like, I have a daughter there, she's 13, she's a great kid, like, but something very similar happened. She went out drinking, her friends videoed things, you know what I mean? And like, it could have been a lot worse than what it was. You know what I mean? It could have been a lot worse than what it was. Luckily it wasn't, but it could have been, you know what I mean? So like, it just, that really opened my eyes to see like how bad it is now.
You know, there's a new law out. If you take any form of video or anything against somebody, will or against them saying it's okay, it's against the law.
Yeah.
For it's against the law to even have it in your phone. So do you know, if I took a video of a girl, and I, without her consent, and I sent it to you and you have it in your WhatsApp, if that's found in your phone, you're supposed to put it like.
But when it happened at the time, I just got involved straight away and got it all sorted straight away and everything done. But like, what I'm saying is like, it could have been so much worse. Like, so I'm saying like, for these young kids now, like, it's a lot harder than what it was for any of us.
Absolutely.
Like when I was young, when drinking and drugging, that was it. When drinking and drugging,
what was it?
Maybe you laughed. Yeah, maybe you laughed the next day. But oh, look what you done last night. But no one recorded me doing it.
It was in memory.
Yeah.
Like, and you had a bit of crap.
Whereas now they have it on their phones, and it's there the next day, and you're looking at it, and you're like, shit.
Do you think there's not enough of education around that?
That's the social media? Yeah. No, not at all. I think it's poisonous, man.
Yeah.
I think it's very dangerous. I genuinely think that these kids today have it a lot harder than I or we had it, 100%. No matter what, like, I see it, like, with my own kids, like, it's crazy, like, you know, and like, they don't know what they're doing. I don't even know what I'm doing with the social media. Never. So how can they have better what's going on with it, like, you know? So I'm grateful that it wasn't on when I was that age, because
when you were 18, 19, were you drinking, smoking hash? How did things progress for you?
I never smoked weed or hash and like that because of boxing. I never smoked. I never went to it, but I suppose I started drinking, selling drugs and going on that life, you know what I mean? And following the guys that I thought were living the life, you know what I mean?
Well, obviously.
Yeah, you know, 100%.
Like myself and James, we looked up to the guys that were ahead of us as well because of what they were wearing, because of the cars, the watches,
respect,
the
jewelry, as well,
the runners they had.
Fair.
The respect, you know, all that stuff.
Like that, like the guy that you look up to is not your typical teacher or somebody that's in a civil service job or a dentist or anything like that. It's somebody that...
role models are limited, like.
Respect, because they're a hard man. Yeah. Or they're after being in prison.
Yeah.
They're your role models.
That's what I'm saying. You know, like, we all looked up to the wrong guys, like, you know what I mean? So like that, I went down that road. Like, I mean, we moved out of, roughly, we moved to a place called Raheen in Limerick, which is a nice enough place, but it was mad when I lived there. Like, everyone just wanted to get drunk and stoned and, you know, as any teenagers would, like.
Yeah.
Like I said, again, I was looking at the boxing, but the boxing didn't last forever. I turned 18 and drinking and drugging came back and boxing got put on the back burner. I got a car, you know, the usual malarkey, you know, and thought I was the man, you know, drinking started to get more aggressive. Then I moved to Australia when I was 20. My uncle was living over there. And I was laughing. I was saying to Brian from up the road, I thought my problem was Limerick. Like, I'm going to sort this out. I'm going to move to Australia with my uncle. And that's it. My mother was like, you're going to have to sort this out. Like, I was like, yeah, I have a plan. Go on to my uncle. I'll be sorted. So my alcoholism took over my life over in Australia because all I did was drink. I went from normal drinker to a roaring alcoholic in the space of a couple of weeks. That's, you know what I mean?
The geographic, it's when somebody thinks that the issue is their area or the environment that they're in, and if they move to England or Spain or wherever it may be, it'll be different.
Yeah.
It's not.
The
head is still there. The compulsion to drink in the body is still there.
Mm.
You know, it's
never leaves.
The same. The only thing is, you're taking yourself out of this environment, putting yourself in there. There's still going to be pubs there and have licenses and fucking drug dealers.
Yeah. And I'm still going to have the same head.
Exactly.
And that's what I understand. Like,
people.
We're going to, there's going to be have different accents. You know what I mean? That's what I done. I was like, hey, they were the same guys. They just sounded different. You know what I mean? That was the only difference.
Were you walking over there?
Yeah, I walked with my uncle over. My uncle is a sales rep over at the time. We sold Kirby's, man. $3,500 vacuum cleaners, but we were really good at it. Like, me and my uncle. My uncle was top dog over there. Like, you know what I mean? So I was like, I'm starting here and I live with my uncle. I was making good money. Which I meant, the money wasn't lasting. I was drinking it all or doing whatever I could do with it. You know what I mean? I was doing anything taking drugs, you know, everything I could do I was doing over there, man, because I had no consequence over it, because I was, my uncle was like, yeah, grinding, whatever, because my uncle was a drinker as well, like, you know, so it wasn't like I was going home to get sober. So I just, my alcoholism came more aggressive in Australia, so then I got burnt out from it, man.
Were you playing over there?
Nah, I got fat as a fool over it, man. I was just, I completely stopped boxing, completely stopped everything. All I did was walk and drink. That was it. But yeah. Nothing else. I walked from Monday to Friday and I drank from Friday to Monday. That was it, you know. So I was like, all right, I've had enough of this now. So I came home.
What age when you come home?
I came home 21. And that was when my life really started to go out of control. Mm. I met a girl when I was 21. I had my first child. And since then, that year, man, my life became... It just went downhill, man. I started selling drugs in a big way. Got involved with the same people I used to be involved with. A lot more involved. You know, I went into jail when I was 22. I got 10 months for drinking, crashed the car, got out of the car. Like, I crash into your man and I give your man a few digs. Like, because I was like, oh, he must be in the wrang. Like, I was completely in the wrang. Like, Lang, I was drunk driving my car and drove into the side of his car and got out and blamed him for it. Like, so I got 10 months for that. And like, I was thinking, right, I'm after getting rid of jail now, well, this will calm me down. But sure, that made me worse, man. Mm. So I came out then, I thought I was a better criminal than I was going in there, you know what I mean? Went straight back to the old life, but worse. Every time I thought I was going to sort it out, I got worse, man. You know what I mean? And then drugs got worse. And I remember someone saying, when I was about 23, 24, I'm saying, kid, he said, you want to watch it? He said, it's going to take over your life. Yeah, whatever. I said to him, sure. But a couple of years later, man, I was destroyed. I was absolutely destroyed from cocaine and alcohol. Like,
this is going back to a time Limerick was completely on fire as well.
Red Hat. It was, yeah, it was mad. It was a mad time to be. And like, I was highly involved in stuff, like, you know what I mean? And hard in my head, man, like, you know, the head of an addict, like, I was like, yeah, I'm fucking think I'm Tony Montana around this. Yeah. So I was just an idiot looking around thinking I was somebody, like, I was a nobody, like.
Were you in danger, but you didn't even realise it?
100%. 100%. 100% I was in danger. And at any given day, like, at any given day, you know what I mean? Like, but you don't realise that, you know what I mean? You don't think it. And I put, and not only was I in danger, I put everyone around me in danger. The girl I was with at the time, I ended up having 3 kids with her. Oh, I love my kids, but like at the time, I didn't know how to love them. I couldn't love anybody. I couldn't love myself. I didn't care about myself. All I cared about was drinking and drugging.
Yeah.
And the more the older I got, I ended up going back into jail. I got 15 months. I think it was, I got Trenton Gare. It's all the Gare. I gave him a few digs. Something. I got 15 months for that. When I got out of jail there, I was 25. Those were the worst 3 years from 25 to 28 till I got clean and sober. They were the worst 3 years of my life. I was absolutely destroyed. I'd done things that I wouldn't even talk about, that I haven't even talked about people. Do you know what I mean? Crazy stuff. Like, but when I look back now, I'm like, how the fuck did I manage to live through those 3 years? You know what I mean? The only good thing that came out of those 3 years was my now wife, who I'm married to now. I met her in that time. And she was my savior, realistically. Oh, yeah. I didn't know it at the time, but now I know it. You know what I mean? Now we're married, we have our own house, we have 3 beautiful kids, we have a great life. But like, how she survived those 3 years with me, man, is, I don't know how, you know what I mean? And like, yeah. I'm grateful for that now. When I can sit down home, we can talk about it. And, you know, sometimes I get emotional, like that she stayed around, you know what I mean? Now I lost her at the end of it, at the end of my using drinking, I ended up homeless, I lost everything.
Do you know, if you were to look back in your life back then, you know, today, back then you didn't really understand the consequences of your actions and what could have easily happened. And I'm sure there was numerous occasions that your life could have been ended.
Yeah.
Through crashing, fighting, all these different things. But when you look back now, right, and you look back and you say, there could be any number of times your life could have been ended. Do you feel an understanding that there's a purpose here on this earth for your life?
100%.
You should have died.
100%. I say, I sometimes I speak when my wife are talking, and if one of the lads are there and we're having a laugh and a joke, and you know, one of the boys saying, like, oh, you were mad or whatever, blah, blah. But me and myself, I'm like, there's a reason I'm still here. Like, I should be dead. Like, I mean, one time we were out messing around, me and two of the boys were drinking, and the boys were out in the Wallachs, and I fell like 8 stories. About 2 hours off a garden, I think the boys thought I was dead. Like, I was out cold, couldn't walk, couldn't nothing. The boys had to bring me to hospital. Like, how I survived that is beyond me. Like, two big massive drops. I was like, fucking, so that's, when I look back at those things now, I'm like, someone up there wanted me alive. You know what I mean? I didn't know what God was or anything like that. And I don't go around shouting from the rooftop, God this, God that, but I'm a massive believer in God today. Yeah. I have the life I have today because of God. No other reason. You know what I mean? I have my recovery because of God. He brought me to my first meeting, you know what I mean? Got me clean and sober and gave me the life I have today. And, you know, I listened to a lot of motivation speaking, and Denzel Washington said it one time, I didn't always stick with him, but he always stuck with me. And that stick, I love that, man, because I didn't always stick with God. I didn't always, in fact, I hated him at times, but he always stuck with me. And I'm here today, 36 years of age. I live an unbelievable life today, but without God, I wouldn't have what I have today. And that's one thing I know for sure.
It's, do you know what it's like? Do you ever see that picture with the footsteps in the sand?
Yeah.
Where you can see your own footsteps, but there's another set of footsteps next to you. And it's
yeah.
Like, whose footsteps are there?
Yeah.
It's like looking back in your life, knowing that you always asked for the help and you thought you weren't getting the help. But if you look back now on your life, now today, the help came.
100%, yeah.
Slowly, when you were ready. Because if you got it back then, it wouldn't have made...
Would have thrown it away, yeah.
There was always someone there helping you along.
Yeah.
Your prayers were never unanswered.
Yeah.
Your prayers were always answered because you're still alive today.
Exactly.
It's just
yeah.
The human beings want it now.
Yeah, we want it yesterday. We all want it yesterday. You know, and I can still, that part of the addict in me can still get like that. Every time I start a camp and I stand on a weighing scales and I'm 86, 87 kilos, right, I want to be 75 kilos. Tomorrow.
Back on the court.
I want to go over on track. It's not. It doesn't happen like that, Graham. Like, you know what I mean? You know that it's not how it works, like, you know. Yeah. But that part of me, you know, that's like you just said there, man. You know what I mean? It's nailed to the head. Like, we went to yesterday. You know what I mean? Not realizing that it's coming. You know what I mean? It's always coming.
You made a good point there. You said between the ages of 25 and 28, there was a lot of shit happened that you won't get into. And that was important because a lot of people, like, you don't have to bear your whole soul on the telly or on the podcast or go into war stories to illustrate your stories. You know what I mean? You have to protect yourself too.
Of course.
Like,
yeah.
Me and Timmy, we'll share stuff here and leave ourselves vulnerable. But there's a lot we won't share.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not, like, we understand your story, you know, because you're after telling us.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm just saying this because a lot of people contact us. They want to do this. They want to come on the podcast and stuff like that. But, like, it's not about sharing the details and all the little details and the war stories and stuff like that. Because there's no purpose to that.
No.
Do you know?
No.
It's like, it got bad.
Yeah.
And it got bad enough that there was a turning point. But what was your turning point? How did it come to a head for you?
My turning point, I'll never forget it, was the last day I drank. I tried to kill myself. But was it a cry for help? I think so, more than anything. So I went down to the bridge. I went to jump off. A fella was there. Saw me going down over the railing, came over. I knew him, so we were talking. He rang the guards, they came and pulled me off. But, like, I think it was more of a cry for help than anything. But I had lost everything. So, like, I was homeless, I was sleeping on the streets. My mother and father, or my mother and my father are two of the best people I've met. I love my mother and my father. I don't see my mother and father every single day, but, you know, they're why I'm still here today, you know what I mean? But, like, at the time, like, that was it, they were done. And I was like, geez, like, I'd never thought my mother would be done, like, you know what I mean? I know I killed my mother. To let go, like I'm sure all of us are the same with our mothers, like, but I killed my mother to let go, but same with my wife, no, she was the same, she had to completely let go of me, like, I was on my own, and it was, I don't think, if they didn't do what they'd done back then, I don't know where I've gotten it.
You wouldn't have.
That's the truth.
Do you know why you wouldn't have?
No.
Because when people are catching an addict's hand in life, when they're caught up in addiction, they won't get it. Mm. If I catch your hand to bring it down to a treatment centre, you're not doing it for you. You're doing it because I'm catching your hand and I'm telling you, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You're not going in there and you're not going to get it.
Mm.
But where it comes, we get this question all the time, James, like, what do we do? He's not, I'm trying everything. Family members love their.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Family, particularly ones that are caught up in addiction. But what people don't understand, and they're desperate. We often talk about it. People are desperate. They want to know how they can get help for their family members. But when somebody is ready, they will do it on their own.
Mm.
And they'll get it.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it. I've done it on my own. He rang the treatment centre on his own. I rang the treatment centre on my own.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't ask for no help. You know, because I was in too much pain. And my finish up was very similar to your own. I felt no one wanted me anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, even your mother and father's thing, there's a stage where families are so hurt watching a loved one dying slowly. Mm.
Killing themselves. Yeah, big time.
That they have to.
You have to let it run its course. Like, you have to let it run.
No, I see that now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no, but at the time, you know.
Feel abandoned.
You bastards. Yeah. Look what you've done to me, you bastards. But like, yeah. I'm so grateful now. You know what I mean? For that. Because like we just said there, like if they didn't, I wouldn't have gotten this. Like, yeah. I mean, that was the turning point for me. It was like, okay, you just tried to kill us. And then the guys brought me to the barracks. They brought me up to 5B. You know, that started the hospital. And it's like, okay, I need to change something. Like, something has to change. Like, and that was it. Like, I went to a meeting. I went to a couple meetings for a week. Got into the treatment centre. And I haven't looked back since. You know what I mean? One day at a time.
It's important that, and I always, what you said resonated with myself as well. Blaming your mum and your dad, the teacher, the coach, the doctor, the social welfare, the methadone,
everyone else but us, but me, you know what I mean?
Pure victim mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not until you actually take ownership. See, while you're blaming everybody else, they're all getting on with their lives and look at you.
Yeah.
And so you take, you know what? Take responsibility for your actions. Yeah. You're not fucking 12 at all. You're 20. Yeah. I was 27.
I was 28. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the time where a bit of maturity as well is coming in, the pain as well. After having a good few years of it now, in and out of prison, the drugs, and ends up in homelessness for me too. And I get to a stage where, right, there's nowhere else to go with this now. Stop blaming people.
Yeah.
But get your shit together. Pick up the fucking phone. Go to a meeting. Humble yourself. And stop blaming people.
Yeah.
And when you get that, it changes for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, big time. Again, like when I got clean sober, it still took me a while. I was only saying to Brian throughout the road, like I was 2 weeks into the treatment centre when it completely changed. I remember going to the treatment centre and
where did you go?
I went to Bushy Park.
Yeah.
And I got Joel in the council. It was a great guy, but I remember saying to me, like, I'll get you, you know. I was like, yeah, whatever, man. Whatever, boys. No. Like in my head, I was like, right, I'm gonna get clean and sober, and I'm gonna get everything back, everything sorted. And like, I never cried in my life, right? Never. It just wasn't a thing for me to do, you know what I mean? Last baby when I was young, I went through loads of stuff, never cried. I was 2 weeks in the treatment centre. Remember Julian said, when I went in, you'll get a spiritual awakening. And I remember sitting on the cafeteria, and I was just after having a family day the day before. Sure, you know, family day, you know, the family comes on, and you know, and you hear that shit back, real, you know, what you were like, you know. I remember next day I was sitting down and eating grub, and I could feel the tears coming out of my eyes, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
So I got up after the table and went to the room, and Mags was there. I was like, I have to go. That was it, completely changed me then. Yeah. That's when I knew this whole time, these 28 years of my life, it has been me. I've been the problem, like not my mother, not my father, not the teacher, not my missus, not this, not that person. It's been me every time. Everything's went wrong has been by my decisions, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I now see in my life that I'm a product of my decisions. Everything that happens to me is because of what I've decided to do.
Do you know your decisions, that our decisions are based on how we're made, how the environment we grew up in, you know, the culture, you know, some of the influences of the people around us, the people that bring us up. Don't do that, don't do this.
Yeah.
You know, so this is where my head is, right? If we're a product of our environments and we act upon what we believe is right and wrong, and we make decisions based on what we believe is right and wrong, there's actually no one to blame.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah.
So it's when we know better and we get an education around right and wrong, and we start connecting with internally with love and care and kindness and all these different things, and we start feeling the gut for the first time and start reacting to the gut, Now you know. Now you can make a decision, because if you make a bad decision, you're
wrong.
But when you're making decisions based on the way you were brought up and moulded into the way.
But you know that right and wrong thing, that gets all fucked up when drinking drugs, though.
Yeah.
And then that's like when you do things under the influence, and when you're young and you're going in and out of prison, you're taking drugs, you think you're a hard man, you think it don't affect you.
But
you know, when you get mature and you're away from the drinking, and you're thinking back and the regret and the shame and the guilt, that helped me to understand. I knew I wasn't bad. I did bad things that brought me a lot of regret. But because I feel the shame for it, tells me that there's some good in me.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're away from the drinking drugs, then you can kind of make an amends, like, and kind of, I suppose, not go around and apologise to everybody you ever hurt, but help people that are struggling and make sure that you contribute to society in a positive way going forward. Mm. That's all you can do in the end of the day.
That's cool what you're saying there to me. Like, it's like how, like, if an environment's brought up, we've all been brought up in the environment of an Irish home.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, we all have our parents on, but it's like you just said there, like, it was hard, like, for all of us. You know what I mean? It was hard for me growing up. You know what I mean?
They do their best for you.
100%. They all do our best for, but like,
I think we are hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think people in recovery, and I was hard on myself for a long, long time, you know, but now I understand a lot of my decisions were based on what I knew, how I was moulded and how my beliefs were and how I was taught growing up. And also because of the different things that happened to me, I believe that I built up this mechanism, this protection within me to be able to protect me from people and my environment, that all my decisions were based on that as well.
Mm.
My ego was based on all this emotional stuff to be able to protect me emotionally, protect me physically and all these different things. So all my decisions were based around that.
Not letting anyone in, you're like, not letting anyone in, you're, yeah.
It was never that it was any fault to this person, this newborn, this perfect baby, which is what we all are behind all the conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so when I look at it, I look at us like that. If we make bad choices, they're made with no awareness. They're made through conditioning our ego or whatever. But the true person behind it all, without any connection to the ego or anything like that, you know, I think that person, like,
yeah,
there's no fault, there's no blame. We do kind of beat ourselves up over different stuff that we've done, you know, and rightly so. A lot of the shit that we're doing in addiction is wrong.
Yeah.
And I'd be the first one to put my hand on.
When you look back now, it's like, fuck, you know what I mean?
Like,
what was it like when you came home?
From treatment?
Treatment.
When I came home from treatment, I remember my counsellor saying to me when I went in, and I was glad he said it to me. He was like, "No, what happened to you now, kid?" I said, "What?" He said, "Your life is on pause. Nothing changes out there," he said.
"Yeah.
Only you. Your life's on pause, but everything else is still the same out there." And I was like, all right. But then when I got out, I understood what he meant. Nothing changed. Nobody cares. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, this was me. This was a me job. You know what I mean? This is a job on me, for me, by me. So I had to do a lot of things. I had to, like, my friends who are still my great friends, they're still great friends of mine, but I had to stay away from them. I mean, the people, places and things was the most important thing for me. You know what I mean? That was the most important thing for me. Even my wife now, you know what I mean? Like, we laugh and joke about now, like, but when I got out first, like, I got to stay away from you now for 2 weeks, you know what I mean? I look back now and laugh, and she's like, "You're a big idiot, you know, I got to work on myself." And she was like, "All right, Jay, you know, whatever, like, you know, like, obviously, we still got together now." Like,
relationships can be triggered in recovery.
I just wanted to give myself a couple of weeks, you know what I mean? But, like, you know, it didn't last long, though, like, you know what I mean? But, like, in my head, I was like, yeah, well, you know, I got to stay away from you for a while.
That was actually good.
Yeah, I needed just a couple of weeks, man.
That shows a lot of strength for you. How much you want.
She, like, my wife is my best friend, you know what I mean? There's no, like, Lauren, like, she's my best friend. Like, I don't know, like, I got clean and sober for myself. I know I did, but would I have done it without, would I have gotten through my life that I've gotten through in these last 7 years without my wife? No, I don't think so. She's my rock solid warrior beside me, you know what I mean? Everything, even with the boxing career, man, boxing has been so hard. It's a hard job, it's a hard life. You know yourself, you were just talking about boxing, and it's a hard life. Like, my wife has really been my rock, you know what I mean? So, like, I'm grateful that when I got out of treatment first, I gave those a couple of weeks that I knew, like, okay, this is what I need. Because my counselor was saying to me, when you get out, you know, you got to do a couple of things on your own, and You know, you got to do the people, places and things. That was very important as well, was the people, places and things. My mates were all still highly involved in selling drugs, doing the usual malarkey and drinking and drugging and stuff like that. So I had to be careful and mind myself and stay away from the lads, you know what I mean?
And things that can be family too.
It can be family, man, you know what I mean? And some of my, like, I suppose your friends become your family over the years, you know what I mean? And they you'd be very close. That was very hard.
Did they respect your decision?
They did respect. I had one friend, man, he's dead and he got murdered. He was a great friend of mine, one of my best mates, but I never, like, I laugh now, and if his mother and father hear this, they'll know because I've talked about them, I laugh and at it. But I remember I was about a week out of treatment and I remember he rang me, he was like, come on. I said, what? Come on now, you're fine, you're off at 4 or 6 weeks. Come on, we're going to that party. I've stuff here, we're going. Man, I'm not drinking anymore. Like, I'm done. He was like, stop now with that bollocks. We're going drinking now. Stop having the bollocks. We're going. I was like, man, get off my phone, man. I can't, you know. So when I look back now and I think, like, I laugh at his father all the time and say, you know, like, that he didn't understand.
Yeah, I didn't.
I actually brought him to a couple of meetings over the years, you know what I mean, before he passed away. Like, so he didn't understand. So what you said there, like, I didn't expect him to understand, because I was thinking, okay, no one's going to understand what I have to do here, only me. And that's what helped me get it, man.
Yeah.
Was that it was just, it was a meeting. It was no one else's problem. It was no one else's fault. It was something I had to do. So I whacked the meetings out of it. When I got out of treatment, one thing I did is when I met Brian was whack the meetings out of it. I needed two meetings a day early on. You know what I mean? I really did. I needed to go to two meetings a day and build a good foundation for my recovery. And I learned a lot on the meetings, and that's what I done when I got out of treatment. I made sure I got my recovery came first before everything. And I had to do it that way, because as much as I love my wife and my kids and my mother and my father, and I had to put my recovery first.
Did you go back into the boxing quickly?
I went, you know what? I went straight back to my old damn club, Corpus Christi, with Dickie and Jeff, and big thanks to them for that, because it really helped me, man, the boxing. You know what I mean? And it really did help me focus. You know what I mean? Yeah. Went back boxing, it helped me focus. Okay, I'm training 3 nights a week now, back out in the club. You know, I'm going to go to meetings in the morning. I'm going to go training at night time. You know, at the start, it really helped me, man. You know what I mean? And
it's a great sport.
It's unbelievable.
It's a good crack.
Boxing is an unbelievable sport. You know what I mean? It's a hard sport, but it's an unbelievable sport. And it's a great life, and it's a great community, and it's a great whatever club you're in. Like, you know, it's a real tight knit. It's a family. You know what I mean? Boxing is a family. You know, the club I was in were great, and the club I'm in now with my trainer, who's my trainer now, and one of my best mates, he runs a club in Limerick, 3D Boxing Club. And, you know, it's a great community. Boxing is just a great community. So I was grateful for the boxing when I got first club, because I really did need it, man. You know what I mean? I really did need it.
What stage was this? Like, you went back to the boxing, you're in early recovery. At what stage did it start looking like you could be a pro?
But I'll be honest, it was a while in. I went back. I won a couple of fights. I won the Munster Elites. I went up to Dublin. I got stopped in Dublin. I got stopped in a fight in Dublin. It was a terrible stoppage, but I still got stopped. So I was like, geez, do I want this anymore? Like, I was 29. I'm 29 years old. Do I want to keep boxing? You know what I mean? Well, like, what I had learned about myself was that I'm capable of doing anything. I just got clean and sober. You know what I mean? I'm capable of doing anything now. Like, I can push myself. So I started training with one of my best friends, Noel Bond, who's still my strength and conditioning coach now, in functional fitness. And we were humming and hawing what to do. We were thinking about going semi-pro. And I didn't follow up my trainers in my old club. I just wanted to go on my own path. You know what I mean? So I was 29, and one of my friends was good friends with Ricky Hatton. And he was like, look, I can get you a bit of sparring over in Hatton's gym if you want to go over and spar some of the pros. And I was like, yeah, let's give it a go. Like, let's see how I get on. So I went over to Ricky Hatton's, unbelievable, because I was a big Ricky Hatton fan, and I actually didn't get to meet him. He was just gone about an hour before.
Timmy looks like Ricky.
Yeah, he does actually look like Ricky Hatton, yeah. But I went over there, I sparred there, I got on very well. I went to Kieran Farrell's gym and I sparred my old friend Paddy McCrory, who's now 16 and all pro, a very good pro. I sparred him and I got on well sparring the pros. And in Ricky Hatton's gym, Les, like, look, you should think about giving pro a go, you know, because I had a good style, aggressive, come forward. I have a head made of concrete, you know what I mean? I'm not the most skilled fighter, but I'm fun to watch, you know what I mean? Yeah, so like, Les, like, look, give it a go. I was like, look, I've no interest here, I have a family back home. So I came home and I got a message on my phone from a manager here. He said, look, I've seen you there, I'm interested in talking to you. Would you be interested? And I was like, jeez, I'm 30, I'm just about to turn 30, will I? Sat down with the wife and said, look, I have an opportunity here to go pro. What do you think? You know, I think I want to give it a go. Like, she's like, yeah, I support you. You know what I mean? That was it. Then my wife supported me. That was all I needed to hear. You know what I mean? I turned pro and I'm truly grateful for it now, because I'm 6 years in. I'm still having a great career. I've really enjoyed it. I've had some great fights. I've fought on TV. I've gotten paid a bit, not loads, but a small bit. You know what I mean? I've won a title. I've lost a title. So I know I'm in talks for another couple of big fights for titles. So I'm really grateful. I took the chance. And I suppose anyone that's listening to this, I suppose the message I try and share is always take that chance.
Feel the fear and do
it. Always take that chance. Always take that chance. Because I remember at the time, people were like, don't turn pro, man. you're 30, you're not good enough. You never won an All-Ireland. Mm. You're not going to make it. I was like, no, I'm doing it. Yeah. I don't care. And still to this day, I don't ever listen to what anybody says to me. Mm. It's what I say to me is what counts. It's when I look in the mirror, it's like, okay, do we want to do this? Like, you know what I mean? Is this what you want? And that's what I think has kept me doing so well in the boxing, is the fact that I've never listened to anybody else tell me what I can't do.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't do that. Or you can't fight him. You can't take this opportunity. You won't make the weight. You can't do this. You can't do that. I never listened to that, man.
And what would you say to a young fella now in regards to this, say, if he's been told the exact same, you're not good enough, you know? What would you say to him? Like, if it was your own child, what would you say to him?
Follow your dreams. You are good enough. Believe you're good enough. I fully believe now. If you look at videos of me fighting when I first turned pro and look at videos of me fighting now, I don't look like the same fighter. I completely changed because I believed I would get better. I believed I could become a way better fighter than what I was. I believed in myself. And I have become a really good fighter. I'm a good, aggressive, come forward fighter, move my head. I took a couple of losses in my career. I don't care. I'm a very entertaining fighter. I'm good at what I do because I believed I get better. So to any young person, anyone that's being told, and it happens, man. You see, like you said, your young friends in boxing, you've seen it in boxing clubs. Unfortunately, it does happen. Where they're like, no, you're not good enough.
What makes a boxer?
Their heart, what they feel, what they believe, how bad they want it, I think is what makes a boxer. How bad do you want it? I think anybody can be a good fighter, man. Anybody can be a good fighter, but it just has to come down to how bad do you want it. How bad do you want to get better? How bad do you want to learn? How bad do you want to progress as a boxer, as a fighter?
What kind of attitude should they have? If, say, for an example, if a boxer gets knocked down.
Get knocked down 9 times, get up 10. I'll give you a perfect example. I took a fight on the undercard of Michael Conlon's card last year in December. I just won the Celtic title in June last year. Went on a holiday, took the summer off, came back, manager rings me. Got a fight on the Conlon card against Fergus Quinn, a great fighter. Give him mention, a great fighter. Said, yeah, no matter. Everyone's like, no, I'll take that fight. It's like, why? Well, I'm here. I'm a fighter. I'm here to fight. I had one last. I lost to Paul Keane in Scotland. I had one last. Like, I'm not here to pick my opponents or to go around and say, I want the best fights I can get. He's a great fighter. He stopped me in the 6th round. Great fight. It was an unbelievable fight. But I lost bad, like, you know what I mean? I destroyed myself in camp. I done a terrible camp. I lost 10 kilos in 5 days. I messed it up for myself, but not taking anything away from Fergus Quinn. He's a great fighter and he fought a great fight.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't get knocked out. I don't think there's anyone on the planet can knock me out. My corner pulled me out because I remember sitting down in round five and Sean said, what is wrong with you? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you're not throwing punches. I just looked at him and I was like, yeah. And in my head, I was like, I'm not here today. Like, yeah. I just didn't show up at the races. So when I went home from that, because I got stopped, you know what I mean? And I'm known as a tough kid, you know, I'm known as a hard man. So that was hard for me. But that also showed me that we can get knocked down and we can come back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to you if you want to come back from it. And that goes for me in life and in boxing, because I've been knocked down more times in life than I have in boxing. And I've gotten back up and I've come back way better. I got last to Fergus Quinn, I came back, I got a good win. I got another fight there recently. I'm not going to talk too much about it because I'm not going to give him any airtime. But I lost the fight, but I won. I feel like I was robbed in the fight, but I performed unbelievable. So it just goes to show me that we can come back from a bad loss.
Yeah.
Life in boxing, anything. It's not about the fall. It's about the rise. Yeah. That's what life has taught me. And whether it's been my recovery or it's my boxing, it is not about how many times we fall. It's how we rise. There's no talks of me being in big title fights, international title fights. I didn't even think, I got told I'd never win a fight, never mind the title. Now they're talking about me in international titles. So like, I'm living the dream, man, because I've never quit.
Yeah.
Have I lost? Yeah, I've lost, but I haven't quit. And I think a real loser is when you quit. When you like, nah, you know, when you give up for the wrong reasons, that's when you're losing in life. You know what I mean? So like, I've chosen ever since I got clean and sober to not have that attitude, man. Yeah. So like, I've never been afraid to fight. I've said yeah to every fight. My manager loves me. He's like, oh, fight, yeah, let's go. No, like, he's like, yeah. No, I'm sure. I'm like, yeah, I'll fight him. You know, it's like, I just have that attitude, man. You know what I mean? And I feel like the people around me benefit from it. My wife benefits from it. My kids benefit from it. You know what I mean? We've built a good life together. You know what I mean? And I think we have that attitude in my household. You know what I mean?
I think it's great. We were speaking earlier there and you mentioned your son. When he came into the ring after being beaten the last fight. The first time I lost.
And
he came into the ring and you were telling us that he was crying.
Yeah, he was crying.
You know, and what you said to him was powerful.
Yeah, it was... It, that's what he had to understand. Like, I was glad he was crying. Like I said, like, I wasn't glad at the time.
Yeah.
But I said to him, son, like, you know, we have to learn how to lose so we can rise again. You know what I mean? And that's the truth. And I fully believe, like, I have six kids. I love them all so much. I love all my kids. But my 8-year-old son, Brian, I know Brian a long time, and he's like my twin. Everywhere I go, he's with me. You know what I mean? So, like, and he loves boxing, and he's really, really, really good. So I'm glad he's experienced this through me, because when he does experience it in his own life, whether it's in boxing or it's in life, he'll know, okay, all right, I've taken a loss. Now I dust myself off and I go again. No matter what it is, like, you know what I mean? That's the attitude I've given my son now. That's the mentality I've given my son. And to me, that's a success. You know what I mean? If I never fight again, if I never win another fight again, I've already become a success in my son's eyes. I remember one time, I was about a year ago, my son was up playing in his room. This was it for me. Like, I could retire after this. And they were in the room, him and his friend, they were playing, and they were fighting over who got to be me with the toys. That's their fighting over. Who got to be me? I was like, that's it. I'm done now. I don't need the box anymore. I'm a success.
Get job on the video
I'm done. You know what I mean? So.
But you'll give a lot of good nuggets of information there, or inspiration for people that aren't boxing, about, you know, like, not accepting your lot and taking risks and, like, do you know, wanting to change your life. And, you know, if people are thinking about going back into education, or it's not for me, I'm going to be the oldest in the class, I don't have the money, just go for it. What's the worst that can happen?
What is the worst that happen? Yeah. That's, I think, yeah, like,
new
you said there,
experience, meet new people.
But given that at a young age, aren't we? Like, yeah, you can't do that. You can't do that. No, son, you can't do that. We're taught that at a young age, like, that we can't do things. Mm. But when you break out of that and you understand you can, like you said, college, school, all that, yeah, anything is foreseeable for anybody out there.
There's no limits.
There is no limits. Yeah. There is no limits out there. It's up to you. You know what I mean? What you want to do in your life is up to you, whether it's school, work, sports, no matter, you know. And that's, yeah, I'm grateful that I have that attitude today in life, yeah, you know what I mean, that I'm able to share that. And that's, yeah, kind of my message is, you know, do whatever you want to do. If you have passion for something, man, mm-hmm, you can, even if you're not that good at it, you'll learn along the way. Yeah. You will learn along the way, like, you know what I mean? That's, as I'm sure, like, we, yeah, learn everything along the way, you know.
And stick, yeah, with it. If it's something that you really like, stick with it, be consistent, keep practicing it. You mightn't see the rewards immediately, but you will start gaining confidence and self-esteem as you go along, and you'll get better and better and better, and you'll say, Jesus, that was the best decision I ever made.
Exactly,
and,
yeah,
I'm sure you're saying that today.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah.
Have you got coming fights to plug?
I'm fighting in 5 weeks in Wales. In Wales, first time fighting in Wales. I like travelling around, getting a bit of fights with wife and son, get to come, we're going, we're going a bit of trips so far. So I'm looking forward to that, and there's talks of a very big fight after that. But I'm trying to just focus on Wales, because, like, I suppose maybe it's the attic or something, but when my manager's like, look, this is what could be next, I'm like, yeah, great, but I'm going to just focus on Wales now, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I have this fight in 5 weeks. Get a good win over here, and it looks like it could open a big door for another big fight. So I'm grateful for my manager and my team that I have, you know what I mean, that are always keeping me motivated and getting the big fights for me, you know.
Great stuff. We look, best of luck in Wales, and we look forward to
thank you very much.
Progress over
thank
the next
you
couple of years.
Been thank a you
pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me on, lads. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. God bless.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.